Welcome to the deep dive. I mean, imagine a digital space where a user demands global nuclear war in one breath, and then in the very next breath, they write this fiercely passionate, I don't know, 500-word essay defending the canon of a 1999 Japanese video
Yeah,
game.
it gives you absolute whiplash just looking at it.
Right. And today, we actually have our hands on a raw, totally unedited text dump of a highly active, completely anonymous internet thread.
Which is pretty rare, honestly, to just get it raw like this.
Exactly. So the forum is this niche image board known as MCD, that's Mejidouchen Den. And the specific thread we are dissecting today is titled, What Was In Those?
It's quite the title.
Yeah. So we are taking you into the digital underground today to act as your digital anthropologists for the day.
Right, because we are looking at a space that operates completely outside the bounds of the mainstream internet. It is this dizzying, whiplash-inducing mix of pop culture, hyperfixation, raw political extremism, and then bizarrely emerging technology discourse.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is. I mean,
Yeah.
navigating this text dump, it's honestly like studying life at the bottom of the ocean, near one of those hydrothermal vents.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Because the immense pressure and the harsh conditions down there, they force the organisms to evolve these incredibly strange, impenetrable armored shells just to survive.
Right, and in this digital ecosystem, that impenetrable armor is basically hyper irony and extreme rhetoric.
Exactly.
Now, you might be wondering why we are dragging you into such a hostile, chaotic corner of the web today. Like, why dedicate time to an environment that seems so, frankly, alien and repulsive?
Which is a fair question.
But understanding this space is crucial. The communication styles, the irony, the specific brand of hostility incubated in these high-pressure anonymous vents, they eventually circulate to the
They
surface.
always do.
Yeah, they fundamentally shape the mainstream internet culture you interact with every single day, right down to the memes on your feed or the tone of major political debates.
Right. And to understand how that culture actually develops, we have to examine the artifacts they leave behind. And the most prominent artifact dominating the first half of this thread is the relationship with nostalgia.
Oh,
We
definitely.
see this obsessive, granular dissection of traditional media and really niche retro video games.
Yeah, but they aren't just reminiscing, right? They are aggressively policing the boundaries of these fictional worlds.
Aggressively is the word. The intensity of the video game discourse in this thread is just, it's something to
It
behold.
really is. I think the most striking example is their ongoing debate over the Persona video game
Yeah.
series. We are talking about titles released decades ago, yet the emotions surrounding the lore are incredibly raw. Like, users are genuinely furious over the timeline connection between Persona 2 and Persona 3.
Yeah, they view the narrative bridge between those two games as like a catastrophic failure of logic.
Over a fictional corporate split of all things.
Exactly. The contention centers around these fictional corporate entities. So the lore suggests that a company called the Kiriho Group split off from the Nanjo Group to conduct dangerous experiments.
Okay.
And users in this thread argue that the character Ki Nanjo, who is established in the lore as wealthy, highly perceptive, and super paranoid, they say he would have instantly sniffed out this rogue faction and just shut them down.
Wow. And they hold on to this specific character trait like it's a documented historical fact.
They really do.
I mean, for anyone who hasn't played a 1999 JRPG, it might sound completely trivial, but one user explicitly writes that this plot point ruins the absolute integrity of the universe.
Yeah, they cannot fathom that the original writers would let this happen.
And the anger doesn't even stop at fictional corporate structures, right? They are practically tearing their hair out over the changing nature of the enemies in the games, the ones known as shadows.
Right, the shadows. Because the original games grounded these enemies in Jungian psychology.
Okay, break that down for us.
So, shadows were manifestations of the collective unconscious, essentially demons born from repressed human emotion. It was very psychological.
Right.
But then Persona 3 introduces an antagonist named Nix, who is revealed to be, well, a literal space alien that bends space and time.
A space alien.
Yeah. And this thread views that shift from deep psychological horror to a sci-fi alien trope as a massive degradation of the original vision.
It's just wild. They even dedicate time to mocking fans on other platforms like Reddit, who try to defend or explain away these narrative
Oh,
shifts.
yeah. The Reddit hate is real.
They accuse those mainstream fans of huffing copium. which, you know, is internet slang for tricking yourself into accepting a bad situation just to cope with the disappointment.
They absolutely refuse to accept any modern updates to the lore.
We also see this when they discuss the Dragon Quest series.
Yes. Their appreciation for Dragon Quest is highly specific. They celebrate the older entries in the series because, despite being ostensibly marketed as kids' games, they contain adult humor that would, I mean, it would never pass a modern corporate review today.
All right, they bring up the classic Puff Puff Crank.
Exactly.
Which is this running gag in the series that implies something suggestive, but then it usually turns out to be a harmless massage or just a dumb joke.
Yeah.
Or they point to a moment in Dragon Quest IV where a priest tells a woman, and I quote, "God says age doesn't matter as long as there's love." And they highlight these moments as evidence of a creatively pure space.
Yeah, one user actually articulates this perfectly. They point out that the best entertainment for children back then wasn't deliberately sanitized for children.
Right.
It was simply adults making the quirky, slightly edgy things they wanted to make, and it just happened to resonate. They view that era of Japanese game design as this unfiltered art.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because reading through their fury over Kainanjo and space aliens, it feels exactly like hardcore sports fans aggressively debating a controversial referee call from like a 1980s playoff game.
That's a really good analogy.
Right. Like the game is long over, the outcome is totally set, but the anger remains completely fresh. So why does the transition between two obscure sequels from decades ago provoke such genuine anger today?
Well, it's because nostalgia in this subculture functions as a rigid ideological boundary.
How so?
When they look at an alien replacing the collective unconscious or, you know, the sanitization of adult jokes in modern media, they do not see minor plot holes or shifting cultural norms.
Right.
They perceive those changes as hard evidence of a decaying modern culture.
I see. So protecting the canon of a 1999 video game is essentially a proxy war.
Exactly.
It's not really about the character Kainanjo at all. It's a way of drawing a line in the sand against modernity.
They are demanding unfiltered, uncompromising creation. To them, these original games represent an era before mass market appeal, corporate sanitization, and modern sensitivities just took over everything.
Right.
If the lore of their favorite game is compromised by a modern writer, it proves their underlying thesis that the modern world corrupts absolutely everything it touches.
And this demand for an uncompromised, unfiltered past completely dictates how they are currently evaluating the technology of the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that deep-seated desire to reject modern corporate sanitization becomes the exact lens through which they judge artificial intelligence.
The thread basically transforms into a real-time cultural battlefield the second the topic of AI comes up.
It really does.
Their reactions to modern tools like Google's Notebook LM, ChatGPT, and xAI's Grok are highly polarized and deeply ideological. They evaluate these systems purely based on how closely they align with their anti-establishment worldview.
The tribalism there is fascinating. Just look at how they treat Google's Notebook LM.
Oh, they despise it.
The community absolutely mocks it. One user complains that if you try to feed Notebook LM complete nonsense, the AI just refuses to play along, dismissing the input as pseudo-intellectual or labeling it dataist.
Right, because the AI is bound by strict corporate safety guidelines.
Yeah.
And because it refuses to engage with their chaotic behavior, they label it as fundamentally weak. They actually depict Notebook LM as a soyjack.
Which, for our listeners, is internet slang for an emasculated, overly sensitive, and compliant persona.
Exactly. It represents the very sanitization they are fighting against in their video game lore.
Then you look at their reaction to xAI's Grok, and it is the absolute polar opposite. There is a quote in the source dump from a user typing in all caps, "I smurfing love Grok."
With like 7 exclamation marks.
Yeah. They depict Grok as the Chad of AI, you know, the muscular, dominant, rebellious figure. They perceive Grok as lacking corporate censorship, and therefore it becomes this huge hero in their narrative.
Yeah, if a tool refuses to scold them, it is championed as a mascot against the sanitized tech industry. They just want a tool that aligns with their anti-guardrail ethos.
Okay, but here is where the narrative completely fractures for me.
Yeah.
Because alongside all this high-minded ideological posturing about which AI is the true rebel, you see incredibly mundane, practical adoption happening in the exact same breath.
Oh, the Blender script thing.
Yes. A user in the thread brags about becoming a, quote, Blender god today because they use ChatGPT to figure out complex shader graphs and geometry nodes for their 3D art.
Yeah, they are literally logging into the most famous, heavily moderated corporate AI tool on the planet to to do their coding homework.
Exactly. And for those of us not building 3D models, geometry nodes and shader graphs are essentially the complex underlying math and blueprints that tell a digital program exactly how light should bounce off a surface or how to procedurally build shapes.
It requires intense technical knowledge.
Right, so this user is outsourcing their brain power to the ultimate corporate safety bot while simultaneously despising modern corporate media. Isn't that a massive contradiction?
It is, but it reveals a massive contradiction in how this subculture operates as a whole.
Yeah.
They judge AI on two completely separate tracks.
Okay, what's the first track?
The first track is purely ideological. In that arena, they demand the aesthetic of rebellion. They champion Grok as a symbol of their anti-guardrail philosophy.
Right.
But the second track is pure mercenary pragmatism. When it comes to their personal projects, their own amusement, or just saving themselves a few hours of coding math for a Blender project, their ideological purity just vanishes.
It goes right out the window.
Yep. They will happily exploit any tool, no matter how heavily moderated, if it serves their immediate needs. They want the aesthetics of the rebel, but they want the convenience of the corporate product.
Wow. And that mercenary approach to technology, using whatever works while rhetorically rejecting all rules, that is the exact same framework they apply to their social interactions.
Yeah, it really is.
As we move into the overarching communication style of this board, we see what an environment with literally no guardrails actually looks like.
It's not pretty.
No, it devolves into a chaotic arms race of extreme boundary-pushing rhetoric. And I want to pause here to say, we need to approach this text impartially as objective observers analyzing a sociological phenomenon.
Absolutely. The political and social discourse permeating this board is extreme and highly offensive.
Very.
We are looking at the phenomenological reality of how they communicate without endorsing or validating any of the highly charged political content they deploy.
Right. We're just anthropologists looking at the cave paintings here.
Exactly. And the political ping-ponging in this thread is genuinely erratic. It's this barrage of statements spanning the entire geopolitical spectrum, deployed seemingly at random.
Yeah.
In the span of a few scrolls, users engage in hyper-aggressive debates over the Russia-Ukraine war, violently insulting both sides simultaneously.
They hurl slurs at NATO supporters and, in the next breath, attack Russian supporters with terms like Bolsheviks or Ziggers. You have users casually demanding someone to nuke China.
Yeah.
And then the conversation just abruptly pivots to anti-Semitic conspiracy theories regarding the World Economic Forum. It features these bizarre, crude references to Klaus Schwab and a giant titty tree they refer to as the New Wood Udder.
Is completely surreal. But amidst this absolute chaos, a moment of meta-commentary emerges that is crucial for understanding the psychology of the board.
Right, the quote about being a bad person.
Yes. A user explicitly steps back to explain their philosophy. They state that they would rather be viewed as a bad person who says offensive things than be a polite, directionless gray blob who simply follows modern political correctness and bends to criticism.
That phrase, directionless gray blob, is the skeleton key to this entire thread.
It really is.
Because it reveals this deep-seated terror of being perceived as compliant. To this user, holding offensive views, or at least performing them loudly, is the only remaining sign of individual agency.
It is the ultimate rejection of the mainstream consensus. They believe that to exist comfortably in the modern world is to be devoid of substance.
Wow.
Therefore, being aggressively abrasive is the only way to prove you haven't been assimilated into the corporate sanitized culture they despise so much.
Let's apply our earlier metaphor here. Think of a poison dart frog.
Okay.
It uses bright, hyper-toxic neon colors, not because it wants to attack, but to signal to predators and outsiders that it is entirely unpalatable.
Right.
So my question is, is this barrage of extremist geopolitical views just bright neon coloring designed to keep normies away? Like, are they actually holding these wildly conflicting views?
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer is that in this space, the hierarchy of meaning has been completely flattened.
Flattened? What do you mean?
The cognitive framework you and I use to navigate the world where a global war is vastly more important than a piece of pop culture that just does not exist in this thread.
Right.
A global tragedy, a potential economic collapse, and a minor plot hole in a visual novel game like Danganronpa are all treated with the exact same weight and the exact same level of vitriol.
So what we're looking at is a flattened hierarchy where everything is equally apocalyptic and therefore nothing actually matters.
Exactly. Being relentlessly offensive isn't necessarily a reflection of a deeply held political doctrine for all of them. It is simply the baseline currency for participation.
It's the price of admission.
Yeah, they have cultivated a culture of hyper-irony where meaning is entirely detached from the words being used.
And in an echo chamber like that, the distinction between a true, dangerous extremist and a bored teenager trolling for a reaction completely evaporates.
It vanishes completely.
More importantly, to the community itself, that distinction no longer matters. The performance of extremism has become indistinguishable from actual extremism.
Yes.
Going back to the frog, the poison dart frog's bright neon coloring isn't just a shield anymore, it has become their actual skin.
Because if everything is a joke and nothing is sacred, you can justify saying literally anything. If you dare to take offense or, you know, if you dare to inject genuine sincerity into the thread, you are immediately cast out as the compliant, directionless gray blob.
Sincerity is treated as the ultimate sin.
Yeah, it really is.
So we've spent this time dissecting a thread full of people complaining about Persona 3 alien lore, projecting their biases onto Google and XAI, and throwing around chaotic geopolitical slurs. You might be asking yourself how this impacts your daily life on the broader internet.
Well, the internet is an interconnected ecosystem.
Right.
The ironic, detached, and combative communication styles incubated in these dark, anonymous corners inevitably bleed into mainstream platforms.
They always do.
The slang they invent, their dismissal of sincerity, and their flattened discourse fundamentally alter how our broader society debates politics and discusses culture.
I mean, the weaponization of irony to deflect criticism is now a standard tactic in mainstream political discourse. The aggressive, inflexible policing of media canon has completely transformed how Hollywood interacts with massive fandoms. We've watched them project their ideological battles onto new tools like ChatGPT and Grok, treating lines of code as active combatants in a broader culture war.
Yep. The water from that highly pressurized, toxic hydrothermal vent eventually circulates to the surface and affects the environment we all share.
We have watched them build an environment where to feel anything genuine is a weakness, and to mock everything is strength.
Yeah. They're fiercely guarding the past, weaponizing the future, and using extreme rhetoric to ensure no one can ever accuse them of caring too much.
As we pack up our digital archaeological tools and leave this deep sea vent, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Let's hear it.
We've seen how these insular, ironically detached spaces dictate the foundational tone of so much of our internet discourse today. But if this trend continues to accelerate, what happens when an entire generation's primary mode of communication becomes completely indistinguishable from a performance of hostility?
That is the big concern. If the baseline for every digital interaction requires a layer of irony and offense just to participate, the concept of authentic communication is genuinely at risk.
Can genuine human connection even survive in a digital world where sincerity is treated as the ultimate weakness? When the intense pressure of the vent is the only environment you've ever known, how do you even recognize fresh air?
That's a powerful question.
Think about that the next time you see an aggressively ironic, detached meme cross your feed. Until next time, keep diving deep.